Good morning and welcome to Connections. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell, and we'll be talking with all these people later. But first, we have to get right to our guest this morning, and it's my great pleasure to introduce Beena Venkatraman, who is the editorial editor of the Boston Globe. She's a former climate change advisor in the Obama administration, author of the book we're going to talk about, The Optimist Telescope, and a manship artist resident. Good morning, Beena.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. First of all, I must say congratulations on having accomplished so much in such a... You remind me of Mozart when he was at age 35, all that he accomplished. So congratulations with that, and I appreciate your efforts to save the world.
I have never heard a comparison to Mozart before, but I think that might be a bit of a stretch, but I appreciate it. I'm just doing my best, like we all are, to contribute to our democracy and our planet.
We're going to talk about your book, and I want to know what inspired you to put this book together, because with your background in science, in government, and in journalism, that it seems to me that it all sort of maybe came together with some kind of a vision that you had. So could you explain, first of all, the Optimist Telescope? Where'd you get that from?
Sure. So, well, the idea really came from trying to work on problems of the future, trying to help communities, help companies understand the science of our changing climate, of how it's warming and what we can expect in the future, and realizing as I would do that people really struggle to think ahead. But also finding that in my own life, that I was really no better at that. I barely would think about the next, 5 years. I put off a lot of big life decisions of my own. And I started to get skeptical about whether we could solve problems like climate change when I was in government, when I was working in the Obama White House, trying to help people think ahead, because it was so hard. But then, the sort of journalist in me got very curious about this question of, is it possible to think ahead? When is it possible to think ahead? When I left government? Because, we have so many examples from human history, whether it's the fact that we farm and chart the seasons and plan for times when we're not going to have as good of harvest in the future, or the fact that we are able to put people on the moon by planning a whole space program and eventually sending people up into space. And so what I really wanted to try to get at and understand through looking at bodies of research from psychology and economics and anthropology, but also from going around and looking for stories of where people have succeeded at thinking ahead, where communities have succeeded at it, and where even society has, I wanted to understand what helps us think ahead and what hurts us, and how we can do more of it in our lives so that we're prepared for the longer lifespans we're living as individuals, but also so as communities and as society we can prepare for some of the impacts of climate change.
I think that what you're doing reminds me of a couple of things. Isaac Asimov, back in the early 50s, I believe it was, predicted in a paper that the ecosphere could support 8 billion people, and here we are. And then in the 70s and 80s, Carl Sagan and a colleague wrote about the runaway greenhouse effect and nuclear winter, and we are approaching maybe perhaps one of those. But on the other hand, the bald eagle has come back. People have done things to bring the bald eagle back. The ozone layer has been repaired. So it sounds to me like what we've messed up, we can fix.
Well, that's a great question. I don't know if we can fix everything, but the reason for my optimism is knowing that when you have this alchemy of political will, when there is sort of agitating for social change on the part of, a large enough part of the public, a vocal enough constituency, and you pair that with scientific innovation and ingenuity, solving problems like protecting habitat or developing HIV drugs, for example, you can pair those with also policy innovation that helps people in their lives organize themselves to do better for the future, be able to prescribe fewer antibiotics and contribute to sort of better public health. You can have policy that helps people drive less by developing public transit. When you pair those three things, the scientific ingenuity, the political will, and policy innovation, we can actually accomplish a lot. And it doesn't take, sometimes I think we can look around us and we can feel despair. If you look at the state of our politics right now, or if you look at the warning signs that we have of how the planet is changing, it's very distressing. But sometimes what we see is not necessarily what's possible, and change can be nonlinear. You can have a buildup and a tipping point to when things really kind of move in the right direction. And I think with the youth movements we've seen all around the world around climate change, particularly in the last 6 months, with the way that young people are demanding that the Democratic candidates have really rigorous plans on climate change, you're seeing that, and for that particular problem, really come to the fore. And some of the stories I tell in the Optimist Telescope are about community head has managed to do things like bringing back the bald eagle, like solving the problems of development in floodplains instead of developing in those reckless areas, you know, really thinking about what's good for the long-term health of their community. I tell stories of investment firms that have, instead of just, being guided by the short-term noise in the stock market, have really invested for value over 5 to 10 years and really built up a profit and also built up a successful way of investing in long-run companies, not just those that are kind of flashes on the screen.
Your word is out there in many different places. You've done TED Talks, and I'm going to link to some of those so our audience can get an idea a little bit more in depth of what you're thinking about. And also, the big thing tomorrow, you'll be going up to Rockport to the Shell and Lou to be talking with Christopher Lydon of PBS and NPR. And tell us about that format, please, Bina.
Sure. So I'm so grateful I'll be in conversation with Chris Lydon at Shailen Liu in Rockport tomorrow evening. It'll be Friday evening at 7 o'clock. And for anyone who wants to come, it's a free event, and you can find a way to RSVP online. And it's being put on by the Manship Artist Residency, where I was for a couple of weeks last year, which was just beautiful, at Paul Manship's former home in Gloucester. And so the event is really a conversation to talk about this possibility of thinking ahead, how we can do it better in our lives, how we can really embrace it in organizations and businesses and even in society. So it's an opportunity for people to learn more about those ideas and the findings of my book, but also I think it'll just be fun because Chris is great, as people know. He's just an incredible conversationalist, and it'll be a fun evening. It's a good way to spend a Friday evening thinking about reasons to be optimistic about the future and not just in dread.
I think that's great. And your book is divided into three parts, and I love the title, The Optimist Telescope, because it sort of puts to bed rose-colored glasses and 2020, hindsight is 2020 and so on. And where'd you come up with the title? Because I think it really grabs the attention.
Well, the title really came out of thinking about what it takes to think ahead, right? We need tools. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of sort of the ship captains of yore scanning the horizon, using a telescope to do that. And I think the optimist, I kind of shifted from a sense of cynicism about our ability to think ahead into a sense of optimism, in the sense that I believe that we have choices. Do I think we'll do it? I don't know. You know, I don't have those rose-colored glasses on. What I do feel is that we need to be the kind of optimists who engage and in fighting for our shared future. And if we pick up the tools like the telescope to do that, I think the possibilities are endless.
I think it's fantastic, and I, again, appreciate your efforts. I also appreciate your taking the time to talk with us this morning, Bina. Thank you so much, and again, tomorrow it is at the Shailen Liu, 7 to 8:30, a conversation about the Optimist Telescope with Bina Venkatraman. Venkatraman, my bad. Bina will be there with Chris Lydon, and 7 to 8:30, it's a free event. Thank you so much, Bina. Congratulations, and good luck with everything.
Thank you so much, Rick, for having me.
Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. That is Bina Venkatraman, who is trying to save the world. And she's in. You check out her biography, which I have linked to, and you will be amazed at what she's accomplished at such a young age. And she is well-educated, of course, with having worked also at she was educated, I believe, as a Brown. She's been to Harvard. She's taught at MIT. And she is the editorial editor of the Boston Globe, which is it just blows me away. And and you can tell how nervous I am. talking to someone like that. And also the idea is that we can fix things, I think. And it's just I wanted to ask her, but time is short. She's on a very tight timeline. I wanted to ask her about those who don't believe. They call science fake news. because I had a student once in an Algebra 2 class who denied that we landed on the moon. And it blew me away. He was watching Fox News, and he got his information from Fox TV that it was a fake. The moon landing was a Hollywood fake. And no matter what I did...
There's a bunch of people out there who really believe that. I remember the guy that played for the Red Sox, Carl Everett, was one of those.
And I
just like, how could you really believe?
I know a history teacher who believes that and gets his information from Fox TV. And I actually emailed Seth Shostak, who was he's the senior astronomer at the SETI Institute, and he had been kind enough to answer some of my other emails and talk with me. And I asked him, what do I do about that? You know what he said? Shake the dust off your sandals and move on. You're not going to get through them. But that was about 15 years ago, or maybe even more. Now, it's just not one kid in the class. We've got a whole culture full of people who don't believe in science, who don't believe it. And what the hell do you do? I mean, you can't keep shaking your sandals off. You're going to have a whole society that doesn't trust education, doesn't trust science.
Well, he's right, though. There are some people you just are not going to reach. and the reality is you're spinning your wheels by even trying. The definition of insanity is to keep trying the same thing over and expecting a different result. It's not that... You can hope that something changes, but I find the conspiracies related to the moon... I'm more interested in knowing what the astronauts saw that they haven't been able to tell us than whether we really got there.
And I have a story about that at some point. All right, anyway, thank you to Dabina Venkatraman. I really appreciate that. Also to Rebecca Reynolds, who helped set this up, and of course to Christina Geramini at the Boston Globe, who also connected me with Dabina Venkatraman. I appreciate that. Thank you all so much. This is Connections. We finally can introduce the rest of our program here this morning. A little while from now, Josh will be talking with Tom Hankard, who is the president of the local Rotary. What's it called, Rotary?
He's an assistant governor at the local district of Rotary for north of Boston.
Thank you very much for clearing that up for me. We'll also be checking in just a minute with Nahant Police Chief Robert Dwyer with Bill Newell. Tim Kearns will be by later on with the Beer Pod, and we'll have our little discussion here with Bill and Josh and me coming up in just a little while. So thank you for being with us. We'll be right back with our next interview. This is Connections on MSO.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, joined by Chief Robert Dwyer from the Nahant Police Department. And Robert, welcome. Good to be talking with you.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
Talking about the distracted driving law, I know you presented before the Nahant Selectmen recently about the law. Before I get into the law, let me ask you this question here about distracted driving. Do we really know the data on how many drivers are distracted? I mean, I don't know that we do. Do we? I mean, we and if whatever we know, it's got to be low. It can't be the real data. I mean,
The real data in Massachusetts that I know of at this point. I haven't seen anything. I'm not saying it's not out there, but I haven't seen anything, nor have I researched it.
I guess what I'm trying to get to is that if you're a distracted driver, something happens or something close happens, you don't want to report that you were a distracted driver. You know what I'm saying? You want to come up with something else, I think.
Right, correct. And obviously, if you stop somebody for distracted driving, they're not going to admit to it. Very rarely you're going to get an operator of a motor vehicle to admit to it.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the distracted driving law here, what it means for Massachusetts drivers. It just went into effect, so tell us about it.
It's pretty simple, Bill. You can no longer have an electronic device in your hand while operating a motor vehicle. It's that simple. They need to put the electronic device in some type of holder, or it has to be stuck to your windshield or something. It has to be out of you. It can't be in your hands. If you get a phone call while you're operating a motor vehicle, it's going to have to either be answered by Bluetooth or some other way without touching the actual electronic device.
You know, I'm thinking back as you were talking how the cell phone has evolved. It used to be just an actual cell phone. I mean, you would take a phone call on it. You would answer it. And you could make a case that, okay, that's not real distracting. However, with the smartphones and the screens, your eyes go right to that. They have to go right to that phone. And it's like hanging and, you know, looking down off the road for a long period of time.
Correct. It's, you know, I'm probably guilty of myself at times. And, you know, when you pick up that device and it takes your attention clearly off the road, you're looking at the device, you're either answering the phone or trying to put it on speaker or, you know, trying to read a text or even directions. Oh, now, we got the Internet. It's capable of Internet. You might be, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why you might be grabbing that device to use it while you're operating the motor vehicle. And it definitely takes your eyes off the road, and you're not paying attention to what's in front of you, and it's dangerous.
Yeah. You know, we all get a little bit older and look at how cars have evolved as far as technology is concerned, I remember getting my most recent car, which is not that new now, but my wife said, you should get the Bluetooth thing for the phone. And I thought, there's no way I would ever really need that. I mean, what's the big deal? But I'll tell you, that in itself, although it's just phone calls, it is a huge, you know, it's something huge to, you know, allow you to concentrate better on the road.
Oh, absolutely. At that point now, with all the new technology in the motor vehicles, you could be driving along, get that phone call. You hear it ring now right through the Bluetooth system in your vehicle. You hit a button on your steering wheel. You continue to focus on where you're going and what you're doing in front of you, and you can still communicate whoever you don't need to have the device right to your ear. You know, you can still communicate with whoever you're talking to.
And if you're in traffic and your mouth is moving and someone looks over at you, you're not crazy. You're on your phone.
Correct. correct. Not today, anyways. Maybe 10 years ago or 15 years ago, the people would look at you, double take there, but not today. They understand that it's probably a Bluetooth device, and you're just on your phone like everybody else. We're very, very busy with those phones.
Yeah. You know? And now, even today, even a step beyond that is people walking. It used to be, this guy's walking, talking to himself. But no, he's actually on his phone now. He's walking down the sidewalk.
Right. Next will be distracting while walking on your phone. You'll see that. You'll see people walk right out into the street, crossing a street, so focused either on texting or even on the phone while they're walking. So you get, it's a dangerous situation because you're not paying attention to what's in front of you.
So, Chief, as for penalties and fines, now we're in a grace period?
Well, right now we're just trying to get the message out. We're trying to warn everybody and, you know, to give them, because it's going to be, obviously, I call this the educational 30 days. We're going to try to educate the public. We're going to be out there. We're going to stop the motor vehicles, have a conversation. We'll give them a verbal warning and tell them you got to put the phones away. You know, the law is in effect. And after the 30 days, now the fines are going to come into play. So I believe it's the first offense is $100. The second offense, off the top of my head, $250, and the third offense is $500 plus, I believe, an insurance surcharge. So that's the other, when it comes into play with the insurance company, it gets expensive. So
I'll let you wrap it up, Chief. Any other thoughts about the hands-free cell phone distracted driving law?
Well, it's a great law. It's a long time coming. However, like we said, we're not going out. We just want to keep the public safe. We just want to keep everybody safe on the roadways. And we're gonna educate the public as much as possible in the next 30 days. We're not looking to scribble out, write as many tickets. We're not on a ticket looking to write a bunch of citations. We just want to educate the public, and we want to keep everybody safe out there. That's our objective.
I think you're right, the education piece. I just think that once people know that that's the law, it's one of those things where I'm trying to think one time years ago I might have been looking at drivers and, like, it was amazing how many people actually had cell phones in their cars. You know what I mean? We're actually on their phones while driving.
Since the new law came into place, I've been trying to monitor it myself to just, you know, I walk every morning through Wyoming Square, and I see a lot of people on their telephones. You know, so I'm just trying to monitor now, see if it's making a difference. And, you know, so I'm going to try to gather that information in the next week or so while I'm out doing my morning walks to see, has it made a difference? Is people, if the phones, they actually using the Bluetooth, how many people they actually, they're in their hands, you know?
If you're in Wyoming Square, be careful. Chief Dwyer may drop a dime on you here and whatever.
I don't think so. It's my own knowledge.
but useful knowledge, yeah, I think. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
To see what's going on.
All right, Chief, thanks so much for your time, and best of luck with this. I know it won't be easy for, you know, and so on, but hopefully it does what it's supposed to do.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate your time. And like I said, we just want to keep everybody out there safe and in their motor vehicles and their families safe. That's all it boils down to.
Chief Robert Dwyer, Nahant Police Department, distracted driving law, or the distracted driving hands-free law here. And I'm Bill Newell here on MSONewsSports.com.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Welcome back to Connections, and our next guest is Tom Hankert, who is an assistant governor with the Rotary District 7930, who is going to talk to us today about the Polar Plunge. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Josh. How you doing?
Good, and again, belated happy birthday. I know it was your birthday yesterday.
Thank you.
So, tell us about the Polar. I know all about it because it started the year I was the club president, but tell us
I'm there without you and all the people who helped you out 10 years ago. We would not be anywhere near where we are now. So this Saturday at 11 a.m., we're going to be having the 10th annual Polar Plunge for polio. You hear a lot about polar plunges nowadays. You know, Rotary here, we're not, you know, the first to ever do one, but the one that we do it for, the reason, is very special. As you know, back in the late 1970s, early 80s, Rotary realized, you know, they wanted to do something big to help the world. And Rotary adopted the eradication of polio as their number one, as their focus. And, as we hear in the news, you know, with the coronavirus and a couple of years ago with the outbreak of Ebola, you know, we know infectious diseases cause so much problems in the world. So, and a lot of people think the polio is gone. You know, we all get our vaccinations.
It's
America, and it's not a thing. But as you know, Josh, you know, worldwide, we still have three countries that have polio: Nigeria, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. And for people who live in these countries, you know, having polio, unfortunately, can happen. So that's one of the things that we're doing this weekend, is helping raise money so Rotary and their global partners can continue to work on ending polio worldwide.
Well, 10 years ago, Steve Cady, who was the foundation chair for the Gloucester Rotary Club, had attended a Rotary district thing, and I was there, and he came up to me in the intermission, and he said, you know, they came up with an idea that seems perfectly suited for you. And I said, and I could see it in the look in his eye that I was about to get conned into something. I said, yeah, what is that? And he says, well, in an effort to raise money for polio, they're thinking of like a polar plunge. And I wasn't all that familiar with what that meant, and he said, I said, what do I have to do? He says, well, you have to jump in the ocean in January. I said, do I have to stay there any amount of time? No, just jump in and come out. I said, really? I said, well, you know, I'm not going to do that for like 10 or 20 bucks. I said, you got to get, you know, like $500, $1,000 or something like that. And, yeah, we could do that. So from that, I took it back to the Gloucester board and said, hey, why don't we offer to host it? So we talked with Brad Pierce and who runs the Cape Ann Motor in on the Gloucester and Long Beach.
And
we served hot chowder, hot coffee, and hot chocolate coffee and chowder, I guess it was. And, we were in the lobby, and we 35 of us jumped in. It wasn't that bad, I thought.
It wasn't bad. A lot of people, you know, I'm up there listening and think, the freezing cold water. It's not that bad, especially when you're with 200 of your close friends.
And
they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah, the woman who was the assistant, the third in line district governor nominee at the time, Joy DeGuzman, had said, you know, if you do this right, this should be a fundraiser. It should be a fellowship opportunity, and it should be an educational opportunity to let the rest of the world know how polio is still valid. And that's the thing that you alluded to earlier in your conversation, and that, you know, when we, I didn't grow up in the 50s, but the end of it, but people who grew up in the 50s, in the 40s and 50s experienced it in this country. They don't see it now, but it's when Rotary stepped in back, whatever it was, 80s or 70s, there were 150 odd countries where it was still prevalent, and we've knocked it down to 3. And
we have reduced, Rotary with their global partners, you know, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, et cetera, have reduced polio by 99%. And that's, it's amazing, but we're not there yet, as you know. So we're just trying to, you know, raise every dollar we can. And also, too, you know, it's not, as I know you know, it's not that simple that vaccinating these little kids worldwide. You know, the vaccination has to be refrigerated. It's in a droplet, so you actually, you know, have to have the coolers with people going into these war-torn countries. It's not easy. And a vaccine only costs 60 cents. But what it can, what that 60 cents multiplied by, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that have been donated to Rotary for polio worldwide, it changes the lives of countless people.
Tom, this is Rick Moore, co-host with Josh. Thank you for being on this morning. My name is Rick Moore. I'm co-host with Josh. Can you tell me a little bit about the event on Saturday? Who's going to be there, and how people can either participate or contribute?
Yeah. So, people can go to our Rotary District website, rotary7930.org, and they can donate right there. It's going to be at the Cape Ann Motor Inn up in Gloucester at 11 a.m. The parking is going to be at Good Harbor Beach, and we're going to have shuttle buses taking you from the parking to the Motor Inn. We recommend that you get to the parking lot probably no later than 10:30 this Saturday morning, so you can watch everybody jump in. And for donations, as I said, Rotary7930.org.
Great. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. It's a big event, you know, and we've built it in the past as the best winter beach party you'll ever attend. And there'll be refreshments there and a lot of festivities. And it's great to see people from all the other clubs. And you work
sure. Yeah.
And it's going to be a balmy 36 degrees.
Balmy 36 degrees. You know, the first year I jumped in, I actually did the first 3 years, but they kept needling me with emails the whole thing. Oh, it's low tide, Josh. You're going to have to go so far out to get. And I get in the water and I'm like, I'm walking backwards and I get out to about my waist and I realize it doesn't drop off. I mean, I could have probably walked out to the island and still not been over my head. So finally, at a certain point, I just docked and got in again. But anyway, I thank you for like weekly. For the last 6 months to plan and organize this. So
there's a lot of planning. I'm along with the Gloucester Rotary Club, who this event would never have happened, and we have so many people to thank. But you know, the thanks goes out to all the people who will be plunging and raising money to help end the polio virus.
Thank you so much for being a guest, and I'll see you on Saturday.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks,
and thank you, Rick.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good luck. Bye-bye.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill. At the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Looking to score big on your savings this season? Open a CD savings or money market account at Institution for Savings. This is the perfect time to earn funds for your future, and our rates are among the best. Stop by one of our offices in Amesbury, Beverly, Boxford, Gloucester, Hamilton, Ipswich, Middleton, Newburyport, Rockport, Rowley, Salem, Salisbury, and Topsfield. Or visit us online at institutionforsavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF. North Shore Today is MSO News Sports daily local news podcast with news from all around the North Shore. The Post also shares a note on the weather, local photos, notices, and our video of the day. Check it out daily, North Shore Today.
All righty, that first half hour flew by. Again, this is Connections on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. Along with Josh Arnold, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Poposky. And Bill Newell is joining us now. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, man.
Morning.
So, got your interview. We listened to the interview with Chief Dwyer. We've had Bina Venkatrama on talking about saving the planet, and I mean that sincerely. That's not tongue in cheek. She's amazing what she's accomplished, and of course the Rotary. And Josh, are you going to be? Will you be wearing the suit or swimming?
I'll be the polar bear, and I will have my recorder to interview some of the people.
You're not going in the water.
What's a little bit too much to try that? I'm afraid I'll either damaging my phone or my recorder or whatever.
Lame, very lame.
I know. I was going to do it this year, the 10th year, but
I thought you were. Yeah.
I opted out.
Bill, what's up?
I was listening to that, and I was thinking of the times I've been to the beach, not at a polar plunge. I've seen polar plunges, but I've never shown up at a polar plunge with my bathing suit on. But I was thinking of the times you go to the beach and you walk down to the water, you put your toe in kind of, and you say, maybe not.
Yeah. Not today.
You can't do that at a polar plunge, or you'll be heavily ridiculed. Plus, you won't be able to collect your money either, right? So, yeah.
No, you know, it's funny. The first year, I think it was the water temperature was 38, and it was a balmy 36 degrees air temperature. No wind, no snow on the ground, and it really was not bad at all. And the second year, it was 20 degrees, and we all stripped onto our bathing suits or shorts or what have you, and then the politicians and the Rotary officials all gave speeches, So we were frozen by the time, 20 minutes of standing around with just our shorts on in 20-degree weather, and there was a bit of a wind that day. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. If they, if one more person had got up to the mic, we would have ran in it anyway.
Another strike against bureaucracy right there, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Bill, I notice, I don't know what you, what's on your mind here this morning, but you mentioned a story yesterday on the area schools having this blasting device to try to kill germs, and kind of innovative. It made the Gloucester Times today, but that coupled with the threat of the coronavirus, and it is major flu season, this is stuff that people have to at least keep one eye on, I suppose.
Yeah, and the story was about how to what the schools are doing to clean the schools. I guess the story is based on what they did over the vacation week, which just wrapped up this past week. So, but again, I understand that the best thing that you can do in all of this is wash your hands. If you're sick, don't go out. I mean, and don't infect other people by going to work sick, and so on. So, it's just. You just hope and you get your fingers crossed that that we don't get many more cases.
I think the other thing, Bill, is we should talk a little bit about sports this week because the tournament rolls on. Great start to the tournament, although in hockey, our Division II schools didn't do that well. I think Masquinomet won and Gloucester won, and I'm not sure if anybody else did, but a lot of coverage that you already have posted up there with interviews and also a talk with Mayor Betancourt and Peabody.
Exactly. Yep. Check that one out. Mayor Betancourt from Peabody. A lot of different topics. Moved right along. School's one of the big focuses for him, and also talked a little bit about downtown development in Peabody. So, a couple of things there to check out. As far as the games themselves, we've been doing a daily post where we list the games that day. Then we look at the scores. Then we can put the scores into that post. But coming up right after this show, check out. We'll have a post with games with looking ahead to the games coming up this weekend. In other words, Beverly boys basketball hasn't played yet, and we haven't really been noting them in our post. But in this post, we'll look ahead all through the weekend at all the games. So if you are looking for a team that you haven't seen, obviously you can find it in the brackets by clicking on there. But we'll have all the games listed so you get a good look at what's happening over the weekend. It is a long list of games, I'll tell you.
Absolutely, and a lot of teams qualifying, a lot of teams having great, great seasons this year. And I want to thank all the coaches and athletic directors who helped us out, this winter sports season. I saw Dale Dunbar prior to the Winthrop Triton game on what night was it? Tuesday night. I was at the Gloucester Wakefield game, and Coach Dunbar was very optimistic with his team's chances against Triton, and they gave him a battle, losing 1-0. But so many schools have had such great years. Did Danvers with a great effort against Lincoln Sudbury in hockey as well. So I do invite our visitors to check that out, and you have so much coverage, Bill. It's awesome. The other thing I want to draw your attention to, gentlemen, is the beer pod. And, Bill, I don't know if you're a beer drinker, but you really need to pay attention because Tim Kearns puts it all in perspective, and we've got that coming up in a little while.
You know, I've sat with Tim while he's been pontificating about beer. I haven't listened to it, done it on the radio. I mean, that would be real punishment, though, Rick, you're putting me through, right? After 10:30, I wouldn't have a beer in front of me. I'll tell you that right now at 10:45 in the morning. But, you know, he does know a lot about beer, I'll tell you that.
Well, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And
he's a... He's a hands-on learner, too, in that regard, I believe, yeah.
And but in all seriousness, he does put it in perspective. He talks about how it's made and the different ways of brewing, and it's fun. And he puts a historical twist to it as well. So, and, you know, I think we know that Tim is a storyteller.
Yeah, and I did an interview now months ago, but if you searched it, I guess it'd be on our website, with the brewmaster from the Oh man, why I just blanked out here. The brewery in Lynn.
Okay. Well, there are a million microbreweries.
No, this one's the one in Lynn.
Okay.
I'll get it in just a second here. But anyways, it is some interesting stuff. And obviously, the beer, it used to be. I feel like we're going back when I was talking to the chief. You go back and think about how things used to be.
Oh boy. Yep.
But you know, it used to be. Budweiser, Miller, and maybe another beer company.
Schweppes.
That was it. And then the really exotic beers. Hey, there's a beer up in Montreal in Canada called Molson, you know, and,
yep.
And all that. But man, that business has changed.
Do you remember when Coors and you? It wasn't distributed East Coast. It was only from Utah or Colorado to the West Coast, and then it finally started just so people were there was a demand for it, even though it hadn't made its distribution channels over here.
Bentwater Brewing in Lake. I apologize, Bentwater. Yep.
What topic? An interesting interview. I for you. Mention.
It's a story that we covered this story, so I won't mention it now because it was in the newscast. But let me think here. Actually, you know something, I'll leave it at that. I mean, there were a lot of different stories, but we did cover them in our newscast, many of them in the newscast, the podcast, and so on. So,
Did you see any?
Let me show you this. I saw this story last night. This is, if you're looking for the boringest video, it's on North Shore today. And please, if you have a lot of time, if you're listening to this show, you probably have a lot of free time.
There you go.
When this ends and you still have free time, go check out North Shore today. There's an old guy. I think it's called Old Man Steve, and it's not a derogatory description of the guy. That's the videos that he does. But he makes a peanut butter sandwich. Now this is how crazy our society is that I actually watched a 3-minute video today watching an 80-something, 90-year-old guy make a peanut butter sandwich. And I didn't learn anything, to be honest. I really did not learn anything.
But was it a fluffinata?
That's not peanut butter.
Well, a fluffinata is peanut butter, jam, and marshmallow.
Right.
Three layers, yeah.
Well, I tell you...
I don't even think this guy used jam, maybe it wasn't paying close enough attention. I was multitasking.
There you go. Yeah. Internet saved me last night. My wife was stuck at work late, and we had shrimp and scallops, I think, thawing out that she was going to bread and bake and so on for Ash Wednesday. And needless to say, I don't know how to cook, and I don't cook. I can do stuff on the grill. But she wasn't going to be home till late, and so she said...
Wasn't bacon a meat? I'm sorry. Wasn't bacon a meat?
Baking.
I thought you said bacon. Bacon and shrimp. Okay.
Baking, yes. And, I think it's a meat. But anyway...
It wasn't last night, though.
I offered to help her out, and thank goodness for the Internet. So I YouTube it, and I get the recipe. It took me about 2.5 hours just to peel the shrimp, but I got it done.
I'll give you the names of some local pizza places next time that happens to you.
Thank you. We had Tuesdays our pizza night.
That would be a great video of you. Cooking dinner.
Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There, yeah.
That will rival Julia Child. All right, Bill, we got to go. We got to put the beer pot on.
You got it.
Talk to you later. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, that's Bill Bill Newell. We will go right to the beer pod right after we take a quick break. So stay with us. This is Connections on MSO News Sports.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our office as a call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, capeannsavings.bank.
Member FDIC. Member DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
All right, we're back now with the Beer Pod with Tim Kearns. And, Coach, welcome back.
Thank you, Rick.
Now, the Beer Pod, for those who don't know, we started this a couple of weeks ago on Connections. And the Beer Pod is in memory of, in memoriam to, and in honor of Liam Flanagan, who was a former student of mine. He was the son of Tom Flanagan, who taught at Gloucester High School. And Liam, also a very good friend of yours and a brother-in-law.
He's my brother-in-law.
And Liam had a blog?
It was a post on the bridge.
On the bridge.
It was weekly, sometimes bi-weekly.
Corey Kukru's site. Okay.
Yes.
And that was so that was a video.
It was video. We filmed him downstairs.
It was called the Beer Snob.
Well, he called he was the Beer Snob.
He was
the Beer Snob.
Okay.
And we filmed it downstairs in his basement that was finished, and it had a bar, and so he and I and his brother Tom would get together and we would film them, and I had the good fortune of, as I think we mentioned in the last, the good fortune of being in a number of them with him, lending my growing of the of craft beers. And we had a lot of fun with it. We really
well, that's
did.
The intent here.
Yeah.
The intent is to have some fun, have a little tasting from time to time, talk with people, and get some history. I mean, you're being a history teacher ties in beautifully with this.
Well, I almost brought over one of my good friends is from Connecticut, and he came back home, and he stopped at Treehouse, one of the best craft brewers in the country, and he brought back a case of different beers, and he allowed me to take four or five of them, and I've already enjoyed several of them.
So you can teach me how to taste at some point.
And I almost brought one tonight, and so next week,
okay.
I will.
One of the things that amazed me, I was at Cappy's on Route 114 recently looking for a particular wine for my wife. And I happened upon the craft beer section at Cappy's. I was blown away.
Yeah, it's one of the best, and it's actually, in my estimation, it has actually gotten better over the last probably 6 or 8 months. There is an American craft beer side, and then if you go on the other side of the aisle, it's all the European.
Oh.
Style
beers. Really?
Yeah.
Oh my.
And which is kind of cool the way they separate it. So it makes it much easier finding particular mm-hmm. brews, particular styles. And it is quite extensive. There are cold beers available in the chest, but there are also the warm cans that are there on the shelves.
We had been to, I think it was Woodstock, Vermont, for a wedding up there in Lincoln, New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and there's a brewery there.
Woodstock Station.
And those brews are at Cappy's. Mm-hmm. I also...
yes, more so than ever, that it's I think part of the expansion of Woodstock Station is again getting the beer here. You could always find Pig's Ear, which is their brown
Pig's
ale.
Ear, yeah.
That's been
yep.
very, very popular. But you're now getting some of their other selections in cans down here as well.
Even had Pig's Ear up at Gunstock on Friday.
There you go.
So there you go.
There you go. Yeah. I'm not a big brown ale fan myself. But I know some of my buddies really enjoyed it. We used to go on a camping trip up in usually the last week in September on the final week of camping at Lafayette Park. And we would spend Friday night and Saturday night at Woodstock Station. And enough said there.
Well, you could sleep there because they have rooms.
And one of my favorites was their red ale called Red Rack. Mm-hmm. And it was a delicious brew, and I will say I tested many glasses.
Well, I actually had the Pig's Ear with my ski buddy up on Friday. And then what was the other one? When my wife and I are up skiing in North Conway, we'll stop at Moat Mountain, and Moat Mountain yeah. has a beer called Bone Shaker.
Yeah.
And that also is at Cappy's, which just surprised me that these yeah. beers are available now outside the actual microbrewery.
Yeah, one of the things... as an example, Bentwater Brewery in Lynn, who was delivering a lot of their beers locally, recently was able to link up with a distributor, which again is going to expand the area in which their beers will be be available, mm-hmm. and that certainly is key for a lot of the the local craft brewers to expand their market share and to bring in new customers.
Now back to the beer snob. You, I think, told me one time that Liam signed off with the same sign off all the time.
Yeah.
And this is to be sort of our topic today.
Yeah. Liam always signed off with "never trust a beer you can see through," and because
meaning it's too watery or too light or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
No taste.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you can, like most American beers are that, and most American beers are, the big manufacturers, they're mainly pilsners, or lagers, and they're not really heavy, and you can see through them, and of course many of the craft beers, because of the ingredients and the aging process, tend to be a little darker. The double IPAs will be fruitier, more haze in them, so you can't see through them. And your darker, your big ales, your stouts, your porters are very dark because the malts are roasted longer. So you get that brown, almost black appearance in the beer. So you can't see through those. And Liam went by the nickname the beer snob. And I always tell people Liam turned me into a beer snob. 15 years or more ago, as he kept introducing me to all these new beers that he was drinking, and I normally drank which were American pilsners, and because they were much more flavorful, many more varieties, they really challenge your palate, okay, and it became a process of, as we would sit down and have beers, whether it was just Liam and I, and they became the basis of a lot of long conversations at his house, and on a lot of occasions his brother Tom would join us, and we'd share the beer, and we'd go through the process of evaluating the beers, and we would actually, at times, depending upon the beer, we would post a review on one of the sites like Beer Advocate. We would automatically post and rate the beers. Liam and I would go around to various brew pubs as they were opening, and we would critique. Even I still do it now.
Well, that's the point of this, is to be doing that. We want all thumbs up.
I go to a new brew pub, and I will sit there, and I'll order a flight or a couple of flights to get a few more beers. And for those that know, flights are just a row of
two or 3 ounces.
But sometimes 4 ounces, depending upon, again, the brew pub. Might be 2.5, might sometimes be as much as 5 ounces. And you get a variety of tastes, and you if you do that, you always want to have a glass of water to cleanse your palate, and you never want to start off with the strongest beer. You want to end on the strongest beer. Example: you would never want to do a sour before you did a pilsner, because the sour just like destroys your taste buds, and you won't really get the flavors and the enjoyment of the other beers once you take a sour. And
I'm looking,
especially if you don't cleanse the palate, if you don't clean it off.
I'm looking forward to my first field trip with you. I really am.
I will take you.
All right.
I will take you.
So back to the see-through beer.
Okay. So I have to take issue with Liam's comment, never trust a beer you can see through, because again, in 2018, my wife and I, we went on a Viking River cruise, and we cruised the Danube River, and we went through we started in Hungary, we then went into Austria, and then to Germany, and on the boat, the main thing that they served were pilsners, and there were a variety of pilsners from different brewers. And they were all marvelous. And all of a sudden, from being exposed, and I'm sitting there at the bar, and I'm talking to the bartenders, and I'm going through the critique. I'm checking the nose and mouth feel, and how long it stays on the palate, and the taste characteristics. And I really came to enjoy the Austrian and the Bavarian pilsners. They had really good, much more flavorful pilsners than American pilsners, which tend to, as I drink them,
just have a very flat, consistent taste. And on a cold day, love Coors Light. I'll admit, a Coors Light on a real hot summer day, really cold, it just flows. It just flows down. But there's no appreciation of the beer. Does it cool you off? Yeah. But now when I drink beer, and I mainly drink beer, I do wine as well, so I don't do hard liquor, I want to...
We're not judging, Tim. We're just going over
No, I'm
beer.
Just saying, that's those are my preferences, as other people have their preferences. Mm-hmm. I want to have a beer that challenges my taste buds. As someone who drinks a lot of different wines, swishes the glass, you don't swish the beer, you look at the legs on the side of the glass to see how long the legs last on the side, how long it takes to drain down. You look at the color, and then you do a nose test. You do a slight taste to detect the tannins and the various other ingredients that have been placed in it, berry taste, things like that. And you just don't slug it down.
Gulp, yeah.
You just don't gulp it down, you know, like you would a Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's happened now in the beer world. It's come to the point where I order a flight, especially when I've gone to a new establishment, and most of the bartenders know to set them up light to heavy, and you take it, and again, you don't swish it, but you want to put it to your nose, and you want to draw in the aromas. Can you identify certain ingredients that they have added? You can judge the hoppiness by the aroma, and again, you take a short sip. You want to swish it around. You want to see how it sits on the tip of your tongue, and beers, believe it or not, will change from the tip of your tongue to the back of your tongue. You'll get different sensations. You'll pick up different characteristics of the beer. You'll get a hint of the different ingredients that are in the beer from the tongue all the way to the back. Does it have a taste that sits up front and then fades away? Does it slide past the front of your tongue and sort of impact more the taste buds in the back of your tongue?
Okay.
Those are all things that happen when you try the different beers and as you go through. And I'll talk to the bartenders and I'll go, yeah, good. You know, I was expecting the way it's at board.
Something different, yeah.
Yeah, but and here are the ingredients that are in it. I was expecting a stronger taste from this, or I thought this was a bit overbearing. And you begin to sit down and you go, You know, so Liam and I used to do that. We used to go to the beer pubs and we'd sit there and we'd critique.
Well, we'll have to bring a camera with us. We'll have to bring a video with us. So
the funny thing, I think the real kind of fun, we went to, I won't name the brewery, but we went to a local one when it first opened up. And there was a guy working behind the bar. It was his first day. He knew nothing about craft beer. And so Liam and I order flights. So we're going through the same beers and we're evaluating the beers, and we're giving him feedback. And these two younger women came in and sat down next to us, and they started asking him, so what should we drink? And he looked at me and he said, you probably better ask him those guys. They know a lot more than I do. So we sat there, and we talked to the girls about the beers, the different styles, the different flavors to expect. And so we shared what we knew, with Jane Q Public, so to speak. So it's a lot of fun. And you sit at the bar, and people you don't know, and it's a way of drawing people into conversations. Mm-hmm. There are several.
It's a social event.
There are several brew pubs that don't have televisions because they don't want you to watch TV. They want you to talk.
Right.
And a lot of them have, instead of tables for four, they have these long bench tables. And so you share. So it invites conversation. It invites meeting the people that are going there. And the brew pubs themselves are much more family-oriented.
I want to bring it back here, Tim, as we close this out, to the Pilsner. Now, you mentioned the Pilsner that you enjoyed on your cruise. Is that something you remember the name of and you can recommend?
There's several that are available. There's Czech Urquell, which is one of the oldest Czech Pilsners. There's also Veltzen out of Germany, which is available at Cappy's, which is very, very good. There's another one that's just my mind at the moment. But those are very good. Czech Urquell is very good. And it's interesting, both of those, Czech Urquell and Veltzen, have a very distinctive taste. But you put them side by side, and you go, I can't tell which one is which. But each has a distinctive Pilsner taste, one being Czechoslovakian and one being German. The best, as I came home, I kept trying to find a Pilsner that would replicate the European taste. And I may have mentioned this in the last podcast, but Von Trapp out of Vermont, from the singing Von Trapp family, and it is made at their resort. Their Bavarian Pilsner, it's where you're in Europe. Drinking that one, it brought me right back to the boat, right back to many of the restaurants and pubs that we visited that I enjoyed the Pilsners. And when we went back to, again, Europe, this time we sailed from Amsterdam to Basel, Switzerland. Again, I really looked forward to those European Pilsners.
All right. Appreciate it. Do you have a sign-off that you've come up with yet? Or do we have to work on that?
I'm probably going to have to work on that.
We can't use Liam's.
No, we can't. But if you can see through it, it's still gonna taste. It can still taste good.
All right. That is Tim Kearns, and this has been the Beer Pod on MSONewsSports.com. And this has been Connections on MSONewsSports.com. Quick hour.
Yeah, it flew by.
And we got some stuff lined up for next week. Do we have any guests for sure?
We have a gentleman who is going to talk about a local man who is a Rotarian, strangely enough, but is going to the U.S. Crossword Puzzle Championship in Connecticut March.
All right. That sounds cool. And we'll have other guests, too. And please email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Email msonewsports@gmail.com, if you would, please. And I want to thank our guests once again to Bina Venkatarman. A very special thank you. She'll be at the Shaolin Lu tomorrow, a special talk coming up. Thinking Ahead in a Reckless Age is the, it's the title of the book that she'll be talking about is The Optimist Telescope. Thinking a look through the Optimist Telescope, Thinking Ahead in a Reckless Age. She'll be talking with Chris Lydon of PBS and AR, and it'll be Friday from 7 to 8:30 at the Shaolin Lu. And here's the best part of all in terms of the cost. It's free. And again, this is thanks to the Manship Artist Residency Program. We hope to be talking with Rebecca Reynolds next week or even sooner about Mars, as it is. And also thank you to Police Chief Robert Dwyer from The Hunt, Bill Newell for talking with Chief Dwyer, also to Thomas Hankard, who is the
Assistant Governor
at
Rotary 7930.
There you go. I knew that. And, of course, the Beer Pod. We'll have the Beer Pod on probably about twice a month, thanks to Tim Kearns for that. And thank you, Josh. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
And to Bill Newell, thanks to our producer and engineer as well, Bill Proposky. And on behalf of all those people, thank you for joining us. And please, again, email us, contact us, msonewsports@gmail.com. I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.